Chapter 18. Virginia, the Returned.
Victor's war shuttle squats in my reserved spot on the executive tarmac outside the citadel of Aegea. Muttering aspersions, I jump at the side of my own shuttle before it sets down and sprint for the citadel. Removed from the rest of Mars's capital, the grounds are quiet. On the other side of the lake looms a battered Votum torch ship. It only just cleared orbital security to land. I spare it a glance and cut through the gardens, moving so fast Holiday and my line guards struggle to keep up. The boots and capes trail red dirt from my tour of the bunker construction sites in the deep mines of Samaria. Birds scatter as we rush across the white cobbled stone path. Pale tree lynxes stare down, wondering at our hurry, and go back to licking their paws. I burst into the executive wing's side entrance. Virgilus, a Lion Guard centurion, greets me with a grin. "Where are they?" I demand.
"Executive lounge."
I sprint through the network of halls past more smiling guards until I reach the god tree doors. I catch my breath, straighten my jacket, and Holiday opens the door for me. When I enter, four bedraggled, semi-emaciated strangers turn to look at me. I feel an urge to cry when I realize they aren't strangers at all. They are dear friends and colleagues. War has made them ashen and leached the light and softness from their skin and eyes. While they are more Darrow's friends than mine, it would be difficult to find four people more worthy of my trust and respect than these. Harnassus, the steady, soulful commander of the Free Legion's engineers, and the loyal doubter my husband always needed. Screwface, a howler who wore the cloak only weeks before I first did, and was always my favourite of the original pack, though I don't think he ever knew it. Thraxa, the Telemannus sister who taught me to box when we were girls in New Zealand together, and is like a sister, as much as a bulldog can be a sister. And Kolowe Char, Darrow's virtuosic pilot and darling of the masses, media, and single persons everywhere. Holiday shuts the door behind me. They are sitting at a table, eating. They scramble up and snap to attention to salute me. "Slag that," I say, and rush to embrace Thraxa. Her hand sledgehammers my back. Not being as personally acquainted with Harnassus or Kolowe, our embraces are more formal. I soften the most for Screwface. I saved him for last so I could spend the most time on him. He was my school friend, but I know he has always worried he was a hanger-on. He looks nervous, ashamed of the brutality that has been done to him. He's missing a leg and wears a wool cap to cover an atrocious scalping. His face is not the same as it was in the Institute, but his eyes have never changed. They've always been insecure, I think. While Severo learned to put knives into the soft places of those who told him he was worthless, Screwface believed his tormentor's words a little too much and grew to think if only he was only a little taller, a little more handsome, a little more sophisticated, then maybe he would be worthy of love and respect. That is why he agreed to infiltrate the Ash Legions. 3 years with the devils has taken its toll on him. I embrace him and hold him because he seems to need it. He melts into me and begins to sob like a child. The others look away, but I don't let go of him.
A man like this deserves to know both that I am his friend and that his sovereign sees his sacrifices. I hold him for several minutes and spoil him with attention.
"Welcome home," I say to them over his head. I let go of him and hold his face between my hands. "You most of all, my friend. You most of all. Welcome home." He smiles up at me with incandescent love, because he feels that his presence is welcome when he doubted it would be.
"Can I tell her?"
A broad-shouldered woman stands by the window, her hands clasped behind her back. She turns. Her eyes are red from crying. I let go of Screwface. My hands shake. Victor crosses the room to me, and more than a head taller, she leans down to embrace me. My heart plummets in despair and then soars on wings as her lips curl into a smile and she says, "Sevro, Darrow, they are alive." I close my eyes in exultation and then yelp as Victra hoists me into the air and spins me around, cackling. "They're alive! It was them over Venus!" I'm fighting back tears by the time she sets me down. "Where are they?" I ask.
"We don't know,"
Harnassus says, and tries to temper our expectations.
"In fact, we don't know if Darrow was successful in rescuing Sevro, but Victra won't hear anything about that."
"We can game theory it," I say. "I'll get the conservatory and midnight school hives going. We can send out search parties." They all look at Victra. "There's something else," she says. "Char?"
"Our senses were soup the whole journey. Victra tells us the same here?" Char asks.
I nod. "Even the telescopes. It's a light war unlike anything we've ever seen. They virtually annihilated our telescope web and sensor network all around the system. Solar flares, dummy fleets, drone Mamidiae are everywhere. I've never seen fog of war this thick." He grows solemn.
"In crossing the Earth-Mars orbital gap, we observed a squadron of enemy ships too heavy to be a patrol. Since we had Vodum tags, we were able to follow them, but still, we dared not get closer than this."
My pulse quickens. He taps the holo display on the table. A grainy image appears of Eros, the Mars crosser asteroid nearly 17 kilometers in diameter. It was a Republic trade post and military harbor until we lost it 7 months ago to Dido. Dark shapes in the hundreds lurk in the shadow of its mass. Warships. I feel the limits of my power acutely. The Rim's nimble ships have had a ruinous effect against our scouts and drones like never before. They've gouged out our Navy's eyes at the same time that Atlas's Gorgons and Atalantia's spies have cut off my ears by eliminating my own spies. A fleet that size could not sail much closer to Mars without us seeing, but for the enemy to have amassed that much firepower only 6 days away without my knowing, it is humbling. "What is that?" I point to the largest mass. "The enemy couldn't have built a moonbreaker in secret."
"No, they couldn't," Char says. "I'd know that shape anywhere. That's the Morning Star."
I step back from the table. I heard the Votum were trying their hands at shipbuilding. If the Morning Star is there, it can only mean one thing. That Lysander is there, too. He's finally come to war. Victra is smiling. Now, at last, we can kill him. "Victra, recall everything within a week's sail. Alert the Ecliptic Guard. Tell them the enemy is likely already on the way." "And Darrow and Sevro?" she asks. I almost say we don't even know if Darrow and Sevro survived Venus, but I don't. She needs that hope. Today is the first time I've seen her smile in months. In fact, it shows the growth in her trust in me that she waited here after learning the news instead of immediately launching a rescue mission. She knew I'd say no to rescuing them, but after 8 months of holding the line together, I know she would never abandon me to face the coming fight on my own, not even for Sevro. Thank Minerva, I need her. "We can't help them right now, Victra. We don't know where they are. Any ships we send to look for them will be cut off. Hopefully they still have the Archimedes. We know they're resourceful. They know where we are. All we can do is make sure Mars is still home when they come back. And pray they are alive to do so, I think." "Now go, Victra. We've got work to do." After she leaves, I glance at the recently arrived survivors. They're so battle-worn they can't possibly be ready to even think of the front lines. But they're Darrow's best, and I know I should at least ask so they don't get offended that I didn't. "Who's fit to fight?" They all raise their hands. Emotion tugs on my heartstrings, and here I thought I couldn't love them anymore.